welcome to the Faith Debate on News Radio 930 WFMD. We thank you so much for spending part of your Sunday morning with us. Who's us? Well, I'm Troy Skinner, host of the Faith Debate and pastor of Household of Faith in Christ. We're online at householdoffaithinchrist.com. And Daniel Razvi, find him online at conqueredbylove.org. He's one of the pastors of the church that meets at Imran's house. And David Forsey, he's a pastor in the area of the Unnamed Church. It's a house church
that meets. It could be the house that the church that meets at David's house.
The house that meets at David's house, but that's not always accurate. It's not true. Sometimes you're not at David's
home. Home is where the heart is. If David's heart is in the house, he's home.
Wow.
Oh man.
Wow. So if we carve his heart out with a spoon and bring it to your house, that's his house. That was a dark turn I just took right there.
Well, if there are any deer at his house. A female deer is called a heart, H-A-R-T.
Oh.
So we could take one of those.
Oh, yes. That's true.
Doe. I thought a doe was a deer, a female deer. It's a heart.
Well, in the King James, they call it a heart.
So we get the song wrong. So it's not doe, Remy. It's heart, Remy.
I thought it was a male deer.
Heart?
Yeah.
You're right. Heart is a male deer. I'm sorry.
A doe is a female. So the
hind,
song is correct.
A hind would be a female deer.
If it's a heart and a hind, and then a doe and a buck.
Right.
Depending on, those must come from two different root sources. Language. I just like an English that we can borrow from all over the place.
That's right.
It just enriches the language.
And that, I think, is what makes ours one of the most difficult languages to really
be
100% learned, proficient.
That and the fact that we now feel like slang is pretty acceptable overall as a culture. So that means we can add new words, add infinitum, and it's ridiculous.
And we are not agreeing on the definitions of words either, where they can change now because they're fluid.
And social media has so exploded that there are so many terms now that the young whippersnappers are using on social media. I have no idea what they're talking. Now, sometimes if they just use a particular acronym or bizarre term and it's got a surrounding context, I can usually I think that probably means something along these lines.
Yeah, but
sometimes they use 3, 4, 5 of these terms in one social media post. And I was like, I have no idea.
But Troy, you can go the other direction with that, too. Language evolves, right? So I could say this to you. That drangway may look barry at first, but it's dree and squatty. If you go down, it becomes rambly, you get royally, and end up in quite a bucketary. I say a tad squatty. What? Don't stop hicking about newly, you'll never become oofy. These are all English words. They're all actual valid English words in the dictionary.
I want you to post that on social media.
I don't have a social media.
Send it to me so I can post it.
And they have meanings, and I can tell you what the meaning of each of those words is because I practiced that sentence quite a lot. But my point is, you can go through an unabridged dictionary, and you can get a whole bunch of words that are not common use. Hey, if you guys are listening to this, and your wife's not in the car, so it won't be spoiled, you can go and tell her when you get home that she looks quite pulchritudinous. Pulchritudinous sounds awful, right? Sounds like an insult, but it means quite pretty or beautiful or whatever. So go tell your wife that she's pulchritudinous today, and she might slap you until you tell her what the definition is, and then she might slap you again.
Pulchritudinous.
Anyway.
So the scheduled topic for today.
We're halfway done with the show.
And Daniel actually brought this up a number of months ago, and we'll get around to talking about this. As time allows, and time, as it turns out, begins to allow today. We'll see if we can do this in one show, if we're going to need multiple episodes for this. But the general question is, why does it seem as though there's an epidemic of Protestants leaving for Roman Catholicism or Eastern Orthodoxy, those non-Protestant traditions? First of all, I phrase it that way, why does it seem as though, because do we think that, in fact, there is an epidemic? I'm not sure what to make of that.
I know a lot more people than I used to who've moved towards, and it's moves towards Orthodoxy or Eastern Orthodoxy. I haven't seen much in the way of moving towards Roman Catholic, but
there have been a lot of celebrities and a lot of well-known theologians that have moved in that direction over the last few decades, and especially in the last few years.
But I've seen a lot of movement towards like the Anglican tradition, right, which is not papal, but is very Roman Catholic in many, many ways.
So, okay. Well, for our discussion, let's just say that there is this unusual trend towards Protestants leaving to go Eastern Orthodox or go Roman Catholic, mm-hmm. or Anglican, I guess. We'll include that into the mix. Yeah, although Anglicans
and these are not the same
Protestants.
And these are
well,
not
that's a different type of protest. the king wanted to be the head of the church instead of the pope.
Okay. And these what do we owe this to? What's going on?
I think there's probably a number of reasons. One is, I think, very, very effective marketing on the behalf of the Catholic Church in that, we all really should be one church. The protest is over. Look, we signed this joint statement of faith with the Lutherans, and they did. You can look it up, and it's
but
very sad.
But they have a pope right now that's not even Christian.
Well,
so what kind of? I mean, that's got to be undercutting their marketing.
A lot of people have not looked that deeply at it, right? So we're not. But you know, there are.
And I didn't say that for effect, by the way. I think that's an accurate statement. Pope Francis
is not saved.
There's no way. There's no way. Maybe we'll do a separate show on all the reasons why I can say that with such.
I can tell you why I really think it is. So I think it's people looking for something that has had very long-term stability, something that has been the same for a very long time.
People are getting disillusioned with how much fracturing the American church
That's an
is
illusion, though. It's just you're saying that's the perception, because they haven't been the same for a very long time. Like, the veneration of Mary, that's relatively new, right?
Well, and I'm not necessarily thinking the Roman Catholic Church.
All the changes of Vatican II, that's last century. That's not that long ago.
And Troy, well, sounds like Troy's also talking more about Orthodoxy. You have more connections with the Eastern Orthodox Church, it sounds like. Any friends that
I know a good number of families.
And they would argue that they're the original church and they haven't changed anything
at all.
Right, yeah.
Which historically just is, we should get an Eastern Orthodox person on here to have this debate, but it just doesn't hold up under scrutiny when you look at history.
But I think a lot of it has to do with...
they haven't changed much in 1,000 years, but they don't go back 2,000 years without changes.
I think a lot of it has to do with practice.
Liturgy.
They like the smells and bells, as they say?
More strict boundaries.
Mm-hmm.
Because if you grew up in a non-denominational Southern Baptist, whatever, you know, mega church in Virginia or Alabama or something, you kind of get a very freewheeling, you know, flexible boundaries type of feel from a lot of those churches, rightly or wrongly, even some of the ones that are more biblically founded in some of their teachings. Everything feels a lot less rigid, and humans strive and desire strong, strict boundaries of what they can and cannot do.
Yeah, are we talking about the Roman Catholics or the Eastern Orthodox? Because Eastern Orthodox, they're not rigid. I mean, you come and go as you want on their worship services. People come late, leave early.
The services are rigid, though. They're always a certain format. They read from certain prayers, and they have very, very much more strict liturgy.
A consistent structure to what is going on.
I don't know.
And they've been doing it that way for a very long time.
You know, in the Protestant church, you know, some of the more liturgical denominations would be Presbyterians, for example, and they're going to be a lot more rigid in their worship services. And it feels some people, not having the spirit necessarily, could feel more or less spiritual in one of those categories. And humans long for, I mean, we just like with kids, right? If you're raising children and you don't give them any rules at all, they're going to flounder. And in fact, you know, contrary to what they might tell you, kids actually do want rules. If you give them rules and you're very specific and strict on those rules, not to overburden them with many rules that shouldn't apply, but if you're consistent in applying the rules, kids respond much better to that form of parenting than no rules at all. And in a lot of the non-denominational churches or the modern Baptist or charismatic churches in America are much more freewheeling, well, whatever you want, you know, you got freedom in Christ to do this and that and other thing, and how you worship doesn't really matter, just as long as it's from the heart. And people desire more structure than that. And they think, well, we shouldn't be making the rules. God should be making the rules. So where's a church that really bases on what they say God makes and they never change it? Well, the marketing from the Catholic Church is that they haven't, and the Orthodox Church does not seem to have changed as much, so that's why people are drawn to that.
Now, there's a lot of things there that I'm tempted to want to respond to, but I don't want to gloss over. David chimed in really quickly when you started to go down that path. He said, yeah, that's all maybe true, but that's not really what I think is causing the shift. So what do you think it is? If it's not, they're looking for the liturgy and the familiarity of the structure and those sort of, what do you think it is?
Well, no, I think it is the...
Oh, you do think it's that. So what did you mean when you said, I don't think it's that? Did I misunderstand you?
It wasn't just marketing that is what he was saying.
Yeah, and it's not a theological thing. It's a practice thing. So I think with the instability of the American family, I think that's part of the problem. I think, right, there's not roots and security and something consistent to hold on to there for many, many, many
people.
Wouldn't
that be true for the Eastern Orthodox and the Roman Catholics too? Why aren't they storming the doors of the Protestant churches?
I think a few reasons. You could say, all right, like the fundamentalists have a lot of rules, right? And they've been real consistent for a long time, right? But they're not cool. They have a really bad name right now, right? And things that are really old, right? Not out of date, right? Fundamentalists are just out of date. But things that are at least have the appearance or the feeling of being really old, right? Are much more interesting, are much cooler.
And there are many people that buy into the argument that we have the original, whether it's Catholic or Eastern Orthodox.
Or Anabaptist.
maybe. But we have the original doctrines, and before the church fathers messed it all up for us and stuff, and before everything else.
Isn't that the Reformed claim, though, right? That
the
Reformation was getting back to what the Bible
says. A lot of people
says,
have
getting
forgotten
back to the apostolic
but
teachings.
There has been a very big lack of teaching on what the reasons for the Reformation were. And so many people grew up and say, well, why aren't we Catholic? Well, why shouldn't it be one church? I mean, let's just... And the Catholic Church has been signing these joint statements of faith with the Lutherans and trying to get other... There's a whole campaign and the protest is over. The protest is over. We actually agree, right? It's not just lay people. There are pastors that are becoming Catholics, right? There's some more famous ones like, you know, Scott Hahn and somebody else with a really long name that I can't remember right now. There were Presbyterian ministers, I think. The other guy was an Anglican minister, and he became Catholic. And then there's some more high-profile people that weren't necessarily pastors, like the Donut Man. You heard of the Donut Man? Do you know who that is?
I think I only heard of it. You mentioned it once before.
Yeah, he was like a children's church teacher, like, you know, the kids' songs in Sunday school, like I'm in the Lord's Army or Zacchaeus was a wee little man, you know, those types of songs. Mm-hmm. He would go around to churches and sing them to kids and teach kids about Jesus and stuff, kind of little Sunday school sessions. And he went around a whole bunch of Protestant churches, and then a few years ago he became Catholic. And I'm not sure why. I didn't look into too many details he gave on why. You know, in the non-theologian area, some famous people like Candace Owens, for example, a conservative right-wing commentator, podcaster, YouTuber, Candace Owens, she became Catholic recently. And her husband.
Why do you think those people are becoming Catholic? Because I'm thinking of like the normal everyday person, right? Why is it attractive to them? And I think the reasons are pretty clear.
I think some of those same reasons. I think they feel like there's more structure, there's more tradition, and there's less man choosing what to do. It's more because it's tradition. The assumption is made that God is the one that chose it. And it could be a wrong assumption, but the assumption is made that if it's always been done this way, or for a very, very long time this way, why we should come around and say it should be done differently? That's not on us.
I think one of the things that the evangelical, I think this is one of the fruits, actually, of the, you know, the larger evangelical Protestant movement in general, trying to meet the culture where it is, rather than, right, and make it comfortable for the culture, rather than saying, no, like, we're the church, we have a culture, right, and this is what it's like.
Mm-hmm. I don't know. I clearly you guys are more in tune with this than I am, and so I'm probably missing some huge things. I see it as just part of the larger issue. It's the same thing that has people leaving the Protestant tradition for Orthodoxy or Catholicism is the same kinds of thing that's causing them to leave for wokeism. You know, they're abandoning
maybe, but
biblical gospel truth for something that feels like the flavor of the day to them.
Okay, but people aren't leaving to become Catholics because they hate God or they feel like
people aren't becoming Christians because they hate God either. They would say.
Oh, many of them would say that the Christianity has ruined everything, and they would not like Catholics either.
Ed Stetzer, what's the VeggieTales guys?
Phil Vischer. Yeah.
These guys still call themselves Christians. They don't hate God, and yet they're about as woke as they come, right? And they've left the Reformation. They might still call themselves Protestants, but they've left the Reformation.
Another example, maybe Josh Harris.
He left the faith.
I kissed dating goodbye. You know,
yeah, he's apostate now.
That would be when you say people leaving for wokeism, that's what comes to mind. Somebody like him.
But he doesn't even identify as a Christian anymore. He rejects Christianity.
Exactly. That's my point. I feel like that's more common when people leave the Protestant church to become more liberal or more woke. It's usually because they want less and less historical traditions of Christianity, where the people leaving to become Catholics, they may or may not be saved, but their desire is to become more godly and to stick to more Christian traditions from our forefathers.
And there might be something to that, because I think that it's not a Christian church. The fighting words for those who are here, what I'm going to say next. But the LDS,
definitely not a Christian church.
The Mormon, quote unquote church. They've had some challenges over the last decade plus with some dwindling membership and some infighting and some problems going on. And it seems like a lot of that is happening because they've begun to deviate from some of their cultic practices and their mm-hmm. commitments. So the traditions have been altered, yeah. and people are rejecting, like, wait a minute. So what was attractive about Mormonism was this sense of stability that maybe isn't there anymore.
I think what we see here is also like it's evidence of a big sort, right? And of lots of options and of people saying maybe these people who I thought one way don't actually think that now that these other aspects of life and belief are being revealed, right? And so then I there's going to be movement.
Hank Hanegraaff is a famous individual. He was the Bible Answer Man for years on the radio, and he left the Protestant tradition to become Eastern Orthodox about 5 years ago-ish, probably 6 years ago, 7 years, I don't know.
And my knee-jerk reaction when I see somebody becoming Eastern Orthodox...
I was thinking if that was the long name you couldn't think of.
Maybe. I don't know. Oh, okay. I don't think so. The other name I was thinking of is somebody who became Catholic.
Oh, okay.
But my knee-jerk reaction when I hear somebody becoming Eastern Orthodox is that it is more likely that they could be still saved than if they become Catholic, because I have more of a high regard for the Orthodox Church than I do for the Catholic Church.
That's you're going to get in trouble with that statement, but I think there's a strong measure of truth in that. I will say this: I think someone can be Roman Catholic and be saved.
Mm-hmm.
But I think that those who are Roman Catholic and are saved either aren't really familiar with all the things that their church teaches, or they are familiar, but they choose to ignore those things and embrace a more gospel-centered understanding of things, and they stand in disagreement with their church. Why they wouldn't leave at that point, I don't quite understand that. But Eastern Orthodox, I think some of the attraction there is they don't really have these discussions that we're having. The faith debate is not an Eastern Orthodox thing. They don't debate these things. They everything's a mystery. And so we're trying to figure out, does God control the weather, like we were talking about last week's show? And it's like, it's a mystery. When is it okay to have a war and not have a war? It's a mystery. Who can say? That's kind of an Eastern Orthodox attitude. And I think a lot of people are weary. The political fighting they're just tired. It's like, I just want to have some sort of religious experience. And that's a big, big deal, right? This generation is all about experiences. So they can have this experience without the fighting. And they've been told, if they're Protestant, they've been told for their whole life that Roman Catholic's bad. let me try the Eastern Orthodox. I've never heard that the Eastern Orthodox tradition is bad. Let me go right. do that. So I think that's yeah. part of it. Mm-hmm. And the Eastern Orthodox has the advantage, too, of some of the same things that are attractive to the New Age mystic, experiential spirituality kind of a thing. It fits better in Eastern Orthodox mode, right? So that might be a feather in their cap for those who are looking for a change. I don't find it attractive because I want to know what the Bible says. I want to be taught about it. I want to dive in. I want to press in. In the Eastern Orthodox tradition, that's not what they're all about. I don't think I'm saying anything pejorative. I think if we had one of the representatives in the room, they say, yes, that's true. Well, we figured out years ago, we don't have to fight about it anymore. We've decided that everything that's worth knowing, we know, and the other stuff is a mystery. You know, that's kind of where they live. In the Roman Catholics, I can understand why somebody likes the tradition and the structure of a liturgy and stuff, but why wouldn't they join a Missouri Synod Lutheran congregation, which has a lot of the same vibe, or even Anglican, a lot of the same kind of a high church mm-hmm. vibe.
Yeah.
Why wouldn't they do that? Why go Roman Catholic? So what's going on there? Is it just tapping into what they think is history? Is that what you think?
Well, I don't know. That seems to be more of a I don't have a lot of experience personally with anyone who's done that. Gone the Roman Catholic direction, if you will. Mm-hmm. You know, from my observation, that seems to be, you know, people that are much more like intellectually driven, that seems to be what's happening.
And I wonder what kind of, I mean, have there been, have you seen other studies? Is it like George Barna or, you know, Barna Group?
Oh, I don't know. That'd be interesting. Like,
the Protestants that are leaving, are they leaving from particular Protestant traditions? Are they leaving from the, you know, the charismatic rock concert Sunday morning experience and leaving something for something more traditional? Are they leaving from the frozen chosen hyper-Calvinist Presbyterian thing and going to something that's not quite so legalistic and controlling? By the way,
or are they leaving from some Anglican or Lutheran traditions that are much more liturgical already and then going to something?
Yeah, like I wonder. I know a lot of Southern Baptists have left the Southern Baptist Convention, but that's because...
They're still Baptists, though, generally.
Yeah, they're leaving because they get mad if you call them a denomination. But the Southern Baptist denomination is a mess and has been now for a decade. And
They believe in critical race theory and stuff, too. Most of the churches may not agree with that.
Yeah, I think that battle's over. If you're still a Southern Baptist church, you need to say, you know what, it's over, move on. You're not going to rescue that. It's the Titanic. It hit the iceberg. Okay, it's going to sink. So get a lifeboat. Get one now before it's too late.
Which is interesting, because it seemed to have a resurgence for a time. It used to be very liberal.
Well, there was a time about 15 years ago, I think, there was a time they had a vote on whether to pull all of their kids out from public school. And it was very narrowly defeated. That would have massively changed the South if they all pulled out of public school at the same time. Millions of kids.
Well, not just the South. It would have been changing the whole country. Yeah. You know, but I think that I don't want to make this about the whole Southern Baptist thing.
Right.
But I think some of the people could be leaving that, be disenchanted, and they're not sure where to land, and they end up at the local Catholic parish because the priest, you know, gives a very funny homily for 10 minutes every week and they think that's cool. You know, who knows? A lot of people I know that are Catholic, and we have a lot of Catholics in my family. My wife and I come kind of out of a Catholic tradition in large measure. Mm-hmm. And if you ask them about church and stuff, without exception, it's, our priest, man, he's great. He's so funny. He is so funny. I love his homily. He is so funny. Like, that's why they go. So,
yeah,
you have a pithy preacher. That's great.
I would have to say, if you were saved and you were really grounded in doctrine, I don't know why you could find it in yourself to join the Catholic Church. You may come up with reasons to stay in the Catholic Church if you already were there when you came to this better knowledge of doctrine, and we are struggling to find a number of reasons why that could be, but I could imagine there could be some. I have much less respect for somebody that joins the Catholic Church actively. Same thing with the Orthodox tradition.
Again, it depends. I don't know as much about the Orthodox Church as I do about the Catholic Church. And David sounds like knows more about the Orthodox Church and less about the Catholic Church.
Well, this might be a bit of an ask for a lightning strike, but I don't mean a lightning strike as a judgment from God, but like a needle in a haystack kind of lightning strike. We're flummoxed as to figure out what some of the main reasons might be, because we don't have a lot of personal exposure to people who have made this decision. At this moment, if you happen to be hearing the show and you're one of those people, you've left the Protestant tradition to become Roman Catholic or to become Eastern Orthodox, contact me. And if you're comfortable, we'll have you on the show so you can explain what the reasons were. I'd be curious to know what your reasons were. Yeah. And I'm sure that you would be speaking for some other people, and we can try to grapple with some of those reasons. And we might playfully debate with you a little bit and try to persuade you to come back to the right side of the river. But that might be helpful, because there's no... To my way of thinking, there's no legitimate reason to make that change. So I want to know what, in your mind, was a legitimate reason to make the change. Anyway, that's going to end up being the final. The plea for you to join the show in the future is going to be how we end this show. David Forsey, Daniel Rasby, I'm Troy Skinner. Thanks so much for listening to the show. Find us online at householdoffaithinchrist.com and WFMD.com. Not sure what we're talking about next time for sure. I think we got some things in the hopper, so I know it's going to be great. That much I can tell you. God willing, it's going to be great. Till next week, 167 and a half hours from now, God bless.